This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Okay, so the clock has gone 10 past 10, which in my mind means synchronicity. I'm not entirely sure whether things have balanced out completely in the studio at the moment, but we are shuffling and we are just going to make sure that all the people who need to be here are here. As I said, it's a different version of Power Talk, this Tuesday edition, because we're having a bit of an election debate. We certainly cannot have all 70 parties on the ballot represented in studio with us. But what we thought is we would go numerically, just in terms of the biggest organizations in the country at the moment, and those who have had some kind of experience, whether at municipal, regional, or national government, and certainly are represented as we speak in the National Assembly. And so we've just gone in order of a session, which is the ANC is with us. The DA is the largest opposition party is with us. We had invited the EFF and they had accepted. I just want to be clear. And in fact, their deployee was Advocate Dalimpofu. But then apparently there was then a directive to say all hands on deck in their Limpopo campaign today. And so they wanted to know if we could postpone or do the debate later. We felt we couldn't. So that voice is missing. And we've got the IFP as the fourth largest of the opposition parties. Unfortunately, the councillor is running a bit late, so he's going to start off on the line and then make his way into studio. So without further ado, let me introduce our representatives. Representing the largest party amongst us is David Mahlobo, a member of the ANC, former Minister for Energy, State Security, and Deputy Minister for Housing for Human Settlements. He's not here in his capacity as a former government representative, but as a member of the ruling party. We also have Gwena Moloto, who represents the DA in Tshwane, is a spokesperson for the DA in Tshwane, but will also be giving us a national picture. And then on the line, soon to be in studio, running a bit late, is Councillor Mlungisi Mabaso, who is of the IFP Youth Brigade. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're just going to converse about the issues that matter to you as the body politic of South Africa. And as I say, all of these are parties that already have a presence in government by virtue of lawmaking in parliament, and can help us understand their experiences and what it is that they stand for. So, David Mahlobo, over to you. It's a big manifesto. The big ticket item everybody keeps referencing is the 2 million jobs that have been promised, and also making government function better administratively. So could you just break down for us what the ANC says it's offering the electorate?
Thank you very much, Lerato, and also want to thank Gwen and the IFP that will join us late, that you are affording the People's Organization, the ANC, the opportunity to come and have a discussion. In the main, the ANC has a story of the last 30 years, a story where working together with our South African citizens, we've made a lot of strides in a number of areas. And these strides, you could see that one of the biggest things that has happened, our economy has grown. And it has grown, as you compared it, since 1994 to where we are now in terms of the GDP, it has tripled. In as much as we've been having a sluggish economic growth, which is one of the biggest challenges that we face for a number of reasons, as you'll recall that there have been some global recession that we had, where the pandemic, our own issues that are domestically. But as we sit right now, our economy surpassed all the economies in the Africa. We are actually ranked as economy number one. But admittedly, as the ANC, we are not satisfied with the pace of economic growth. And that's why, in terms of our plan, economic growth is at the center of all what we need to do, so that we can be able to be in a position to bring our people to work. In the main, the ANC will be in a position to stimulate a number of sectors in our economy, so that we can be in a position to ensure that we created the 2.5 million job opportunities. Currently, we are not speaking about theory. Currently, you look at the presidential youth stimulus package that is there, the issues of the reskilling of our peoples using the South African National Defence Force, looking at the expanded public works program. But more importantly, right now, as we speak, the Department of Labour is in a position, working with private sector, the CETAs and the NGOs, to ensure that a number of South Africans are skilled in a number of sectors, whether you are looking at agricultural services, construction, engineering, safety, and there's a jobs plan. And then in our jobs plan, already the money that is confirmed in the fiscus is a 23 billion rand. Okay. And we'll have to be building more issues around the infrastructure. Remember, the infrastructure is a bedrock of any investment. And if you look recently, even the rand is trying to stabilize on the basis that there is confidence in our current initiative. But we must be able to indicate that while we do all these issues of infrastructure, your green economy, issues of climate change, we have to stabilize the grid, because you can't invest when the grid is not stabilized. Okay. And over the last 48 days, the grid is stabilized. But in terms of governance, we are paying more attention in terms of rebuilding institutions, working on the issues of local government, because local government, in as much as it has been at the center of delivering services like water, electricity, there are challenges, and we need to start to support them.
All right. Many things you've said there. We will interrogate them in a moment. Gwena, what is the DA offering the electorate?
No, thank you so much, and thank you to the listeners at home. From the DA's point of view, I mean, our message is clear that we need to rescue South Africa, that this is our most important election since 1994, and that really the stakes have never been higher. So we've said that we need to create 2 million jobs. And when we speak about that, our whole manifesto, it's not pipe dreams. It's based off the achievements that we have where we govern. If you look at the last 5 years, four out of every five net jobs created in South Africa were created inside the Western Cape. So when we say we want to create 2 million jobs nationally, it's not a pipe dream. We say that we want to end load shedding. Unlike the ANC, our solution isn't to just burn more diesel inside the run-up to an election. We need to open up the grid to private power producers, and we're doing that inside the city of Cape Town, inside the Western Cape, where there are many municipalities that when there's load shedding were two stages below, and even inside the city of Tshwane, where we're now opening up, we've put out a tender to bring the private sector to take over the Rooival power stations and the Pretoria West power stations, which would potentially supply about half of the electricity that we need, taking away the need that we have from Eskom. We want to tackle cadre deployment. It's completely crippled the state. It's allowed for mass corruption that has cost this economy trillions. We need to tackle crime. And again, we see it inside the Western Cape, when violent crime stats have gone up across the country inside the last year, inside the Western Cape, we've actually seen violent crimes on the decrease. We need to fix our education system. Right now, we're crippling the future generation. We've seen inside the last stats that, you know, four out of every five grade four learners struggle to read for comprehension, and that's a stain on our democracy. We need to lift people out of poverty, and we need to fix our healthcare system. So that's really the core seven apex priorities that a DA government would bring. And we really do believe that, as I said, these are not pipe dreams. It's not thumbsuck numbers. This is a scene where we govern.
Okay. Councillor Mlungisi, good morning.
To yourselves, the listeners, the colleagues who are in studio.
Okay. Shall we hear from you? What is the IFP offering the South Africans?
No, thank you very much. I think the manifesto of the IFP is very much clear and easy to implement. we have presented 13 points to the electorate to say these are the priority areas that the IFP is going to focus on. One of them, which is the job creation, and in that point, the party is saying we will need to start by making sure that all the jobs that are in the market, your unskilled jobs, your semi-skilled, which are currently occupied by foreign nationals, must be given to South Africans. And the second is that, South Africa needs to be industrialized. I mean, when the IP was in government in KwaZulu-Natal, each district has economic activities, and we are saying as the party, we need to start initiatives, that will rejuvenate, and also create those economic opportunities that were there previously, so that at least people are able to get employment. And the party is saying the stringent requirement which hinders the growth of small businesses must be repealed, so that small businesses will be afforded an opportunity to grow, so that they assist in mass employment of our people. The ISP has also prioritize the issues of education to say we need to change our education system so that at least it's able to produce students that will be employable, that will be able to produce the demands of the economy, and it's also saying that the NSFAS must be administered from the universities themselves. We need to remove this thing of middlemen that exploit our students, and we are saying that our NSFAS system must be linked with that of SASA and that of SARS, so that when the student is studying at a no-fee school, it do not then need to apply for NSFAS, because the system will automatically tell you that this student is from a disadvantaged family and is in need of a student, a financial aid assistance. So that's what the party is saying. On the issues of crime, we are saying the powers must be dissolved to province and local government, so that at least police are given more power at a local level, so that they are able to curb the crime that our people are facing with. Mm-hmm. And in the issues of corruption, we are saying we need to have specialized courts that will deal with issues of corruption. The party is saying we need to introduce or open a dialogue on the reinstatement of a death sentence, so that we are able to deal with perpetrators of crime such as your rape and gender-based violence. And the party is saying on the issues of health that we need to to dissolve those more powers to local government and provincial government, so that they are able to deal with issues of health. And we are saying each district, each local municipality, okay, needs to have tertiary hospital, so that at least there is easy access of healthcare by our citizens in the country.
All right. There's a lot that's on the table, but there's some resonance here in that all three of you are preoccupied with the issue of job creation. All three of you are concerned about issues of infrastructure and the national grid, and all three of you are preoccupied with the issue of crime. And then we can start to distill it further. So let's talk about job creation. ANC says 2.5 million, DA says 2 million jobs, IFP says job reservation. So here's what's really intriguing, David Matlobo, is that, as you said, ANC's been in government for 30 years. You've got a 30-year track record. And there was a period shortly after 1994 where we saw the South African GDP increase and the economy grown. And then you said the economy tripled. The trouble with that figure is that the inequalities widened in South Africa. So with that growing economy, the middle class that blossomed only came in at about 11-12%. The rich in 1994 got four times richer, and the rest of the population struggled to make the leap from working class to middle class. And then what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years is a significant recession, as you rightly said, triggered by a global recession, but South Africa never found its footing. And so when we say the economy is growing, we're talking a 0.1%. 5%, certainly not the 5% that's needed to actualize jobs. On top of that, we are seeing a decline in jobs. South Africa now has the highest unemployment rate in its history, and it's all happened under the ANC's watch.
We are correct, Lerato, but there are actually factors that are internal, which are domestically, but there are also factors that are actually external, which are mainly in the global arena. As we speak now, the story of our success working together with our people must never be diminished. A number of South Africans, who should call them a middle strata, some of us are part of the middle strata, we got empowered because of the progressive policies we put in place. Your black economic empowerment, your employment equity. Some of us, we work in the state through all the ranks, very competent young black professionals. Then they actually got to accumulate new assets. But this middle strata is the most volatile one. It's like the rent. It fluctuates all the time. That's why in one of our priority areas is to address the issues around the cost of living, because the cost of living has the biggest impact. Therefore, the issues around our decision where people can have an opportunity to access some of the pension benefit so that we can be able to cushion our people. But at the very same time, we're actually managing the issues of the stringent fiscal policies around the issues of the interest rates that we must be able to manage so that we can actually don't have a hyperinflation around some of the issues that are there.
How are you going to make that intervention? Because constitutionally, the South African Reserve Bank is an autonomous institution. So you can't make an intervention on interest rates without violating the autonomy of the Reserve Bank and the self-regulating financial markets.
We respect the independence of these institutions. That's why, as an organization, we safeguard them all the time, we protect them. But remember, the decision around the interest rate in terms of the band is a policy decision that can be made by the Minister of Finance. We have not actually invoked that particular instrument.
The inflation target.
Yeah, we have not invoked it because it's a policy decision that can be made. It's not about interfering with the autonomy of the bank. But in the meantime, remember, our economy is not in isolation. It's a part of the global economy. Yeah. You could see the Reserve Bank in the US, the Fed, and so forth, the decisions they make. But equally, around issues of Lerato, around issues of cost of living, the poorest of the poor, around cushioning them, we introduced the Social Relief Distress Grant, which we're actually going to graduate it into basic income grant. The issues around those social security, around those other people that we are taking care of them. In other words, those who are most vulnerable in our own society, there are clear policies and mechanisms that we are deploying to assist them.
I just want to push back a little bit on some of those things, and I'll bring the others into the conversation. So, okay, so you want to address this issue of rising inflation. You will not interfere with the independence of the Reserve Bank, but you would like the Treasury to relook this issue of inflation targeting and see if whether there can be a growth mandate for the Reserve Bank. Okay, we hear you on that one. In terms of supporting the poor, you've introduced a social distress grant, 350. Many people call it the Ramaphosa grant. Hardly enough for anybody to survive, but affordability is what it is. And then we talk about the number of people who are living on welfare. So whilst the pro-poor policy, I think, has a moral imperative, the growth imperative can't be supported by a pro-poor policy. You can't have almost 18 million people living on some kind of grant and think you're going to stimulate the economy. That's the first thing. You also spoke extensively about infrastructure investments and the public works program. Well, capital expenditure and infrastructure in South Africa has declined to -3%. So a lot of the money that the government has is merely paying salaries, and 20% of it is servicing debt. There has not been renewed investments in infrastructure to stimulate jobs.
What we could do, Lerato, the issues, they are always interlinked. We must never isolate them. The issues around economy, issues of social transformation, issues of environment security, all of them, they are interlinked. One point around social protection that we need to actually also highlight in passing, you know, the intervention by government around the escalating food prices the issue of zero rating some of the items, especially stable food and other issues that are mostly for the vulnerable, including issues that are there, is one of the biggest interventions, but it's not the only panacea of our problems. Okay. Let me just speak on the other issues that we are looking at. You know, when you look at after the issues of COVID-19 and the July unrest, you look at our lodestar in terms of economic footprint. We have the Economic Reconstruction Recovery Plan. At the center of that Economic Reconstruction Recovery Plan, the bedrock is infrastructure. Okay. The massive investment that we are doing in water for the next 5 years, we'll be spending more than 200 billion rand just to ensure water security. Okay. Go to the issues around power generation, the work that is being done now. We have unblocked the issues of energy mix, where renewables have come in into the party. You go to Northern Cape, the biggest actually renewable solar system that is coming in the Northern Cape, including the hydrogen economy in terms of electro analysis that is happening, where will you have produced about 10 gigawatts of energy when actually construction is happening there. There are these issues, whether you go to logistics around issues of the issues of transport network, the export that we could be in a position to do. The plans are firmly in place and work is actually happening. Okay.
We actually have to take news headlines and then we have to give the others a chance. I just want to ask you your feelings on this. Last year, Statistics South Africa revealed that given the amalgam of issues that the country has faced, domestic and external, the number of South Africans now classified as living below the poverty line is 55%. So even members of the middle class who've lost their jobs and couldn't recover their jobs have now fallen into the ranks of poverty. So 55% of the South African population, as per Statistics South Africa, are living in poverty. How does that make you feel?
One thing that...
How does that make you feel?
I've not lost hope. I know our people are very resilient. We are going through a particular patch and we can see the positive sign and their offshoots. Okay. And working together with our people, we'll be able to go through this cliff.
Gwena, when we come back, you'll tell me how that makes you feel. News time.
You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7.
All right, a pre-election debate involving the ANC, the DA, the IFP. Councillor Mlungisi Mabaso, IFP Youth Brigade General Secretary, is online. We have Gwena Moloto here, who is the spokesperson for the DA in Tshwane, and we also have David Mahlobo, ANC NEC member, former cabinet minister, joining us here to discuss his party's position. Okay, so Gwena, you smiled there a little bit as I asked Mr. Mahlobo a few questions, but I have a few of my own for the DA. You say you're rescuing South Africa from what?
No, look, you said it perfectly in the beginning. 55% of South Africans are now living in poverty. We have a jobs bloodbath, an increase in violent crimes and murder rates. The reality is that South Africa is on the edge. And I always tell people, young people that feel like their vote won't matter, that we could become a failed state. That really is a reality. We have 7 out of 10 young people that are unable to find jobs, the highest youth unemployment inside the world. My colleague did speak about, you know, the growth of the economy over the last 30 years. But that being said, we've also seen an increase inside an unemployment rate since 1994. And so we really... as a country, we need to rescue South Africa from the ANC.
Okay, so rescue South Africa from the ANC. You also said one of the problems is cadre deployment, and you mentioned a few other issues as well. Let's focus on the crime rate, because it's one of your it's one of the positives you pointed out earlier on. Interestingly. And in fact, so that I don't put words in your mouth, you said you look at how we have managed the Western Cape, and even though crime stats are ticking up in South Africa, we've managed to reduce crime. Did I understand you correctly?
Violent crimes, violent crimes, yes.
Okay. What's interesting to me is Travellers World, which is a website about the travel and tourism industry, ranks Cape Town as the 8th most violent city in the world. one of the most beautiful cities in the world, but the eighth most violent cities in the world. So yes, granted, the DA is managing the Western Cape as a province, but in this particular jewel of that crown, you've not managed crime. And in fact, it's getting worse and worse, this violent crime. It's been so bad that in the last 5 years, the government actually had to deploy the SANDF into the Cape Flats and those areas to try to augment policing. So no, you've not had a handle on crime. And I recognize that crime is not a municipal or a provincial function. It needs to work with the SAPS. But whatever strategies you've deployed in the Western Cape belie the truth you think you've just told us.
No, I think that the reality is that, one, there are lots of different metrics. If you look at multiple reports, where Nelson Mandela Bay is now the most dangerous city inside South Africa and the ninth most dangerous inside the world when you look at crime versus the population. There is a massive crime problem inside South Africa, and the Western Cape isn't isolated from that. The reality is that, as you said, the municipalities that exist in the Western Cape itself still exists inside South Africa. And when you have mass unemployment, when you have mass poverty, you naturally see an increase in crime. But what we have successfully done inside the Western Cape, for example, with the deployment of our LEAP officers, is go into specific communities, your Mitchell's Plain, where gang violence is on the rise, and we have been able to decrease crime in there through preventative measures. We've installed, as a provincial government in partnership with the city of Cape Town, infrastructure that can detect when gunshots have gone off, so that you don't have a situation where you need to wait for someone to call the police. We are able to react faster. But we've also, as a party, been saying, as the Western Cape, and we've gotten some criticism for it, but said that the reality is that, as you said, national policing is under national government, and we've said we want to devolve the powers of policing to the Western Cape so that we can have a Western Cape specific strategy to fighting crime. And it's the same thing that we want to do when we take over Gauteng, is that you need to be very specific on creating strategies that speak to the issues of a province instead of a centralized system that the ANC prefers.
Those who criticize the DA's stellar performance in the Western Cape often just say, quite simply, it's stellar performance if you live in urban areas, middle-class areas, wealthy areas, the Atlantic seaboard, and if you're white. People just break it down like that. So if we just look at the crime problem in the Western Cape or in Cape Town, despite everything you've just said, the hotspots for crime that are persistent and just cannot be tackled are Cape Flats, Langa, Gwanyanga, and also Kraaifontein, black and predominantly black and colored areas. So there's a distinct complexion to crime. There's a distinct complexion to underdevelopment in the Western Cape. There's a distinct complexion to hotspots. So nobody's going to say you don't do well, but you do well for a particular demographic.
Well, I think we must be careful there. It's not an issue of race, but as I said, there are certain social factors that link or that create the conditions for crime, for gangsters, and it is poverty and it is unemployment. Naturally, inside middle class areas, it's not as big an issue. Young people are going to schools, they're not stuck without opportunities. And so it's not an issue of black versus white. It's an issue of the reality that middle class areas, richer areas, the social aspects that create crime aren't as prevalent there. And that's why we need to deal with issues of unemployment. And so why, as I said, inside the Western Cape, we have the lowest unemployment rate inside the country. It looks like you want to jump in there.
And even on that issue of unemployment, it's fine. The last statistics do show a decline of 0.4%. You've got unemployment at 20% and still declining. You've created 23,000 jobs in the past year. But we've also seen in the past year a phenomenon of what people call semi-migration from Johannesburg in particular to Cape Town, and a lot of big listed companies setting up a Cape Town secondary head office or headquarters. So is it really new jobs that have been created, or is it a function of that semi-migration and those secondary jobs that are created? So is it a case of Nompumelelo getting a job who's been unemployed, or Lerato who has left Power FM Joburg to join Power FM Cape Town, that job being accounted for? And many statisticians are saying it's the second phenomenon.
Well, look, that's why I initially said net jobs. So that speaks to that. But also, the reality is, you're right, there is semi-migration to the Western Cape, to Cape Town, often by big corporates, businesses. But it's because the DA has created an economy that's able to grow businesses. We're business conducive. We always say we roll out the red carpet instead of rolling out red tape. And that's why you see jobs being created inside the Western Cape. And you can even see it, for example, inside Gauteng. There's a massive Heineken plant that's going to be opening them up in Midvale very soon. And Midvale has the lowest unemployment rate inside Gauteng. Gauteng's unemployment rate sitting at 34-35%. Midvale sitting at 17.8%. And so it's because of these policies, making sure that you create an environment for businesses to grow through our various policies. Okay. When you talk about energy, when you talk about road infrastructure, all of those things. Okay. That's the reason why jobs are being created in the Western Cape.
David Mahlobo, you've got something to say?
No, I think my brother, Gwen, the DA is very disingenuous. And only their story, they are trying to create an artificial way of a story of Cape Town. It's a tale of two cities. It's a tale of two nations in one city. If you are black, you are actually a pariah in your own state. The example, for an example of criminality in black areas, predominantly African and colored, they live the worst nightmare. Mm. And even their lifespan is highly threatened. And they can't claim an intervention when Minister Pekicele is the one that is assisting to bring more resources. You go and look for an example, Lerato, the last point I wanted to say, the issue of service delivery. Go to those black townships. That township, people saw is running in the street. Gwena is my brother, is from Tswan. He can't even make a story about Tswan, which they've been in charge since 2016. Right. And the condition in which people of Hammanskraal, or people of Bronkhorstspruit, that cool can't even go to work. The reality is that the DA, in as much as it's trying to create an impression that is non-racial, but at the core of the DA policies, is about preserving the status quo. That's why they cry out loudly, even around the issues of health, justice, and equalization, when we actually to sign off even the NHI.
Do you have anything to say about Tshwane? Because we have many listeners in Tshwane, and it's been a diabolical situation for Mamelodi, Atteridgeville, and a lot of the black townships.
It can even include Waterkloof, where we stay.
No. Look, Tshwane is a very, I think it's a cautionary tale for the rest of South Africa. Is that it's not the Western Cape, it's not Cape Town in the sense that the ANC was able to entrench itself inside the administration for decades. The fight that we're having in Tshwane currently is that you're dealing with officials and through CADA deployment that are still aligned to the ANC. So my brother spoke about Hammanskraal, for example. Let's talk about the Hammanskraal water crisis. Let's get it out of the way.
Briefly, because we've got another person who needs to join this conversation.
Thank you. In 2020, Edwin Sodi's company, is a consortium of companies linked to Edwin Sodi, was given a tender
by the DA administration.
This is what I like to say. So this is, I think, this is a very important point to mention as well. That in 2020, you're 100% correct. It was in 2020. In 2020, what happened as well was that the ANC provincial government put Tshwane under administration. That tender was not brought forward to the City of Tshwane Council because City of Tshwane Council was dissolved at that point. And you'll remember that when we left government, when we got taken illegally, by the way, out of administration, we had a budget surplus of 400 million. When we came back 7-8 months later, it was sitting at a deficit of 4 billion. And so I'm glad that we mentioned this thing of Hammanskraal, because the reality is that happened when the ANC illegally took over power in the city of Tshwane. We had to go through the court systems all the way to the Constitutional Court to have that decision overturned. But the people of Hammanskraal currently don't have edible, clean drinking water in many areas because of the ANC's failure to fix the issue 20 years ago, and now again ANC tender corruption through Edwin Sodi's company.
We will ask David Mahlobo to respond on ANC tender corruption. I do want to talk about the IFP because you've been doing particularly well, IFP, in KwaZulu-Natal, which is really your stronghold. But in municipal by-elections, you've taken quite a vast electorate back, shall we say that, from Newcastle and also in other parts, in district municipalities, eMadlangeni as well. We're seeing many kinds of gains for the IFP. So when you say we are ready to govern, what are you offering, IFP?
Thank you very much. I think our growth started in 2016, if you look at our performance trend, where we were able to win 12 municipalities out of the two that we had won in 2011 after the breakaway of the National Freedom Party. Since then, the IFP has been on an upward trajectory, of which we really appreciate because, you know, people have come to realize that when the IFP is in government, IFP is able to deliver. And during election time, we do not go back to the electorate to apologize for the failure of our administration, but we go there to tell our successes. And that's why people are still having confidence in the IFP.
Right.
Like, I would like to make an example to say, if you look at the municipalities, especially in KZN where we are governing, the IFP is performing very well. You know, we are receiving clean audits. You know, there's quite a lot of activities and programs, you know, that are responding to the needs of our people on the ground. In Johannesburg, we were in government, there was stability, and the departments that the IFP was responsible for was delivering. So people, you know, they know and understand that when the IFP is in power, IFP is able to deliver. When we're in government in KwaZulu-Natal, as I alluded earlier on, to say there were industrial sites, there were companies that had employed people, and those companies shut down. You know, the colleges that were functioning very well, some of them in the province of KwaZulu-Natal were shut down. So there's quite a lot of work, and most of the infrastructure investment and development in the province of KwaZulu-Natal was done when the IFP was still in government, and people have come to realize that it was actually a mistake, you know, to vote out the IFP in 2004. Most people now, you know, bringing in the IFP, even through the by-elections, you can see that the IFP people, in fact, want the IFP more in government. And we are going to continue to deliver, and we are going to make sure that we become the government that will be within the people, that will respond to all the service delivery challenges that our people are facing on daily basis.
Okay. The one negative, true or perceived, is the idea that the IFP, even though you have been part of coalitions outside of KZN, is still very much seen as a proponent of a kind of a Zulu nationalism. You could say it's not true, but how do you shake off this perception?
Well, I think it's because of the historical events that occurred during the black-on-black violence and so forth, and how IFP, in fact, was founded in the first place, because it was founded as a cultural liberation movement during 1975, when Mtwana Kwakhindangeni was still the member of the ANC Youth League. But over the years and over time, I think the IFP has been able to make inroads, you know, in other parts of South Africa. I mean, we've got councillors now in Mpumalanga. In 2016, we were able to gain seats in Mpumalanga, and we have registered growth in most parts of Mpumalanga, and there are by-elections where we have become number two, if you look at the performance. I mean, in Free State, I've been working in Free State, even myself, and we have made, you know, great inroads there. We had a rally there, which had a positive attendance, and we are hoping that we will get the maximum support that we have targeted for ourselves. There was a rally last week in Limpopo, because we have also made inroads in Limpopo as well. So the IFP In fact, through its interventions and programs at the national level, mm-hmm. we have seen a growth, in other provinces outside KwaZulu-Natal and even in Gauteng, because we were able to increase our representation in council from what we had initially received in 2016 and what we got in 2021. Okay. So we are growing outside KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay, so you are shaking it off. David Mahlob, I want to come back to you. There are many things you said about how, if you can get the economy right, it then stimulates all manner of interventions, from job creation to infrastructure to creating a basic income grant, which is being piloted at the moment, and healthcare. So here's one thing that happened yesterday. Ivory Coast, that country in West Africa, now has a better credit rating than South Africa. And it happened yesterday with SMP. Okay, so both are double B negative, but they are double B with a positive outlook and South Africa with a stable outlook. And it's a minor tweak, but it's saying that Ivory Coast is in a better position to manage its finances and credits than South Africa is. That's point number one. So this is you telling us earlier, look at the size of South Africa as an economy, its value in Africa, but even Ivory Coast on paper is doing better than South Africa. So that's the first thing. You then said we're stabilizing the rand. 15 years ago, the South African rand was 6.50 to the dollar. Today, it's 19. That's not called stabilizing the rand. That's accepting a new psychological level, which makes the cost of living very expensive because we import so many things, from feedstock and fertilizer to fuel. And we are buying it at 19 rands to the dollar. Hence, people can't afford to just live. That's not stabilizing the rand. You've then also spoken about creating 2.5 million jobs. And yesterday, an analyst said a very interesting thing to me. How can the ANC create jobs when, one, under their watch, the post office is retrenching? Two, the government of the ANC issues mining licenses, and yet mining companies are retrenching. State-owned enterprises have collapsed. Some have gone into business rescue. Others can't even be saved. So which 2.5 million jobs will the ANC create when under the ANC, even state-owned companies have been hemorrhaging jobs?
You'll appreciate, Lerato, that the issues of rating agencies, they are very good in terms of giving investor confidence. And if you have looked recently, as far as back as about 3 to 4 weeks ago, the rating agencies were saying that in the interest of stability and globally, it is preferable that the ANC continues to be in government because they trust the ANC, especially the governance of President Cyril Ramaphosa. That's what they said. And if you look at the good news that happened for Cote d'Ivoire, the rating agencies, even ourselves, in terms of the outlook, they are saying we are actually looking more stable because of our own policies. Look for an example. One of the functions of the economy is the ability to get confidence of the investors. In our own country, when President Ramaphosa came into office in 2018, he promised to be able to get a social compact, get investors about 1 trillion rands. He was able to surpass that. It's not a small thing. Business is slowly coming back. There is a lot of investment opportunities that are happening here because issues around the condition of rebuilding of the institution, fighting issues of crime, because crime has been one of the best deterrents around issues around tourism, issues of illegal mining that are happening. Our crime prevention strategy, Lerato, when was the last time when you heard people complaining more about the nightmare that is caused by Zamazamas? That was actually a nightmare that was happening. We might have not completely...
So that we're not talking about it for 2 months doesn't mean we've settled into a comfort zone.
It's more than 2 months, Lerato. But the reality is that our response to a number of multifaceted issues that have actually have an impact on investor confidence are being dealt with. About a month ago, Deputy President Mashatile met with the National Business Institute around the capacity of the state. And we're all creating the condition to say, how do we work together to be in a position to deal with some of those issues? But if you look, the issues around the various sectors, issues of tourism in South Africa now is actually on the increase. In as much as there's a competition on other areas, the issues around the other economies, like as I was saying, around the green economy, the big investment that are happening in the Northern Cape, the investment that are happening in KwaZulu-Natal, right, even in the Western Cape, these are some of the issues that the duty of creating jobs is not for only government alone. But government, you could see what Comrade Tulas and the Department of Employment and Labour has done. Mm-hmm. So South Africans, for the kind of a new economy, okay, they are able to participate. Right. That's why the reskilling program that is happening even here in Gauteng is not a mean feat. Okay. And these are some of the issues that you could see our country is backward to work.
Okay. Just before we go to the news, I want to raise this quality of life issue that the DA talks about. When you talk about the energy grid, it's an important one. You talk about deregulating energy, bring it back to municipal level, empower even households to sell back surplus into the grid. So a lot of your programs are around deregulation. You said in with crime as well, bring the core policing functions to the municipalities, augment what the SAPS is doing, and many other such strategies. The trouble with that, even though I don't think privatization is the right word, is it creates a privatization of the economy, right? The president just signed into law an NHI. And in as much as it's quite a complex policy, the fundamental principles of an NHI is affordable, even free healthcare for all South Africans, particularly the most vulnerable. And the first people to decry it are the DA, with solidarity. Busa said they will look at it, but all of you are considering going to court when fundamentally we're talking about giving people access where they never had access. So it's almost as if for the DA, a country that works is a privatized country.
No, I disagree at that point. I think when you look at the NHI, there's no South African that would say they're against the idea of universal healthcare. Every South African has the right to quality healthcare, and that's a principle that the DA is behind 100% as well. But the reality is that with the NHI, it's not tackling the fundamental issue that we deal with when it comes to healthcare inside this country. It's clear as night and day. Private healthcare is much, much better than the current public healthcare system. And it's shocking. People are consistently dying unnecessarily inside of public hospitals. But where we should be investing is to equip our public healthcare system to compete with our private healthcare system. Not to say that we're now just going to open up the private healthcare system. You're just going to have then the same pressure that you've got currently on the public healthcare system on the private healthcare system. You're basically saying, in the ANC, in terms of saying that no, everyone must be equal, they're saying let's bring certain people down so that we're all equal, instead of saying let's lift everybody up. And if I can, lastly, the corruption inside our public healthcare system is absolutely atrocious.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've got news headlines, and I hope you'll stay with us for another 15 minutes, but I'd like you to do this for me. In a 30-second soundbite, what is your pro-poor policy as the DA in a country that has these huge inequalities? What are you going to do to fix it?
Firstly, if you look where we govern, the Western Cape, for example, Cape Town, 75% of our budget is spent inside poor communities. It's a lie that's created by the ANC to say that the DA is not pro-poor. On top of that, we're also saying let's take away BEE. We can't be looking at race-based policies anymore. If we're going to uplift poor people, it must be on merit. BEE has created your Edwin Sordis of this world, and we're saying that
it's not also created a Patrice Motsepe.
Yeah, but there's positives, there's negatives. What we're saying is that the reality is that the majority of South Africans have not benefited from the system, and that's why you have mass unemployment. It's why you have 55% of people living in poverty, and that's just created a new class of black billionaires. But it's increased the inequality gap, and so we need to work on when we talk about upliftment, let it be on merit. Let it be people that are currently struggling, and not just continuously giving the same people access to opportunities.
Nyakalo, standing by with the news, and we'll be back with your calls.
Getting you what you need to know. Power Talk, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
All right, it's a pre-election debate, ANC, IFP, DA, all in studio. The time is 11:11. Thank you very much to the news teams. I see your call, Mandla and Letlokhonolo. Just one thing I want to raise, David Mahlobo, because, in fact, before I raise it with you, when Gwena was saying that the DA operates on merit and they'd want to do away with BEE because they celebrate merit, you kind of chuckled. Why did you chuckle?
Is that... The DA professes to be most of the Democrats, constitutionalists. Our own founding document, it says we recognize the imbalances of the past and we have to correct them. The DA doesn't believe in the correcting of the imbalances of the past. These legislations that we have actually enacted, it's about redress. And if they say they must be kicked out, it creates an issue of protectionism. And then it confirms that they want the status quo to remain in certain instances. It is the very same thing around issues of cadre deployment. There is nothing wrong with cadre deployment. It's an international phenomenon. Right. Even themselves, I was making an example of some of the best water engineers. They work in the city of Cape Town. They were thrown out. And today they are the best CEOs in the continent, right, running our own institution. They once make a mockery of themselves in the office of the executive mayor, where someone who was not even fit for purpose was actually deployed by themselves. Okay. The only issue that we must be able to say, the best men, best men and women amongst our own nation, okay, they must be given an opportunity to be deployed, as long as they will be able to advance the policies of the government of the day.
Councillor Mabaso, what's your view on redress, addressing issues of poverty, access, BEE, and those kinds of policies?
Well, I think the IFP is very clear from its policy document, the Constitution, that we cannot shy away from the fact that those that are from disadvantaged communities, the victims of apartheid, they need to be programs that empowers them, that uplifts them. So the BEE, there is nothing wrong, in fact, with the principle on the BEE. And I think the issue might be on the implementation, of which the IFP says that it must be transparent and accessible so that it benefits those that were the victims of apartheid, okay, those that are from disadvantaged communities, and the social interventions, in fact, are needed, I mean, to address the issues of inequality in our country. So we cannot then shy away, because if the ANC has failed to implement those policies, it does not mean the principle is wrong, okay, but we need to correct on how the implementation, okay, of those policies must benefit the majority instead of those that are politically aligned.
As we bring in our guests, I want to raise the issue of corruption. We cannot have the ANC here not discuss it. Various studies, so the figures vary, but nonetheless, they are staggering. Stellenbosch University, an agency of theirs, once did a study, found that South Africa in the past 10 years has lost $1.5 trillion to corruption. The Law, Trust and Social Justice estimates it at $50 billion a year over a five-year period. So whichever figures you believe, the IMF has also done some reports, but whichever figures you believe, South Africa is losing anywhere between $200-300 billion to $1.5 trillion due to corruption, especially in the last 5 or 6 years. What does the ANC say to that? Money that could have built schools, improved hospitals, invested itself in infrastructure and the kinds of things that unlock jobs, was just squandered, plundered by the ANC government.
We are correct that corruption is a cancer that we must be able to deal with, and is actually characterized as counter-revolutionary. It's a phenomenon where there is a corruptee and a corrupt. And in the main, in South Africa, our approach as the ANC, following the issues of the State Capture Commission and other organizations, one of the things that we have done was firstly to rebuild the institutions so that the capability of the state from a law enforcement point of view, when you look at our national crime prevention strategy, the ability to increase more numbers in terms of the police is one of the biggest issues that we have done. At the very same time, the issues of training. in terms of actually even adding issues like issues around the forensic, the capability of using artificial intelligence and all these aspects. You could see even in the Senzo Meyiwa case that is currently happening, that is what's happening. You could see that the capacity we lost when we actually disbanded the Scorpions. Now a new legislation has came in. The IT, which is an investigative director, has been given those particular powers, including the Hawks. Mm-hmm. At the very same time, you could see that the investigating directorate now, the cases around state capture, 34 of those cases currently have affecting more than 200 people. There's been actually freezing of assets. You could see even those specialized courts, they are dealing with a number of those particular issues. And government actually right now, we've actually recovered more than 8.6 billion rand. We're also actually using the issues around the financial intelligence center, your fusion center that is there, working with SAR, so that you can even deal with issues of economic flows that are major projects that are happening there. Okay. But in our own instances, Lerato, we're also introducing even the issues of lifestyle audits, which is a very important thing. How do you move from rags to riches so the integrity of the system can be actually improved?
You should see what Vuga Vela has to say even about you on this issue, but we're not here to do that. Mandla, good morning. Mandla, yes, sir.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm listening to the politicians here. I'm in Cape Town. In their argument, they bring up the story of the DA in the Western Cape. Like that guy of the DA has said it, that about 75% of the budget in the Western Cape or in the city of Cape Town goes to the poor. It shows that the DA cares about poor black people. It is a lie that the DA doesn't care about poor black people. But what you find in the townships, you find vandalism, libraries get vandalized, computers stolen, and those have to be replaced more than three times. Soccer fields have been vandalized. If you check, they say in white area, it's all well. And in black area, you've got blocked drains. You come to where the black middle class live in areas like your Mandalay in Khayelitsha, Litter Park, Ekwezi, and Bongweni. Black people live there, black middle class. You hardly find blocked drains there. You hardly find them in those areas.
Okay.
Those blocked drains you'll only find in poor black areas. And it's not that they are not maintained. They get unblocked. The following week, the drains get blocked again.
Okay.
So what is the cause of that?
All right. Thanks. We'll ask the question.
There's congestion in those areas. You've got five families living in one yard.
Okay. Thank you for that. Quite a few things that are coming your way, DA. Onika in Midrand.
Good morning. I just wanted to start by saying, as a young woman in South Africa, it is actually a shame that the Democratic Alliance is really doing what it can to really take us back as a country, in terms of what they normally push as anti-women empowerment, anti-redress stance. And you talked about it when you're talking, you're asking Gwen about issues of empowerment and equity and so forth, because those laws were put in place to address the imbalances of the past. So if you are opposed to it, you are opposed to the poor and the working class, and it is actually a shame.
Okay.
And I just wanted to quickly talk about the fact that I resonate with the manifesto of the African National Congress as a young woman in South Africa, because for the past 30 years, what the ANC has been doing, ensuring that industries are opening for women, and women are able to can take up space in industries and in positions that were not for women in the past. Mm. But also the fact that 1 million houses were built for women before 1994, women were not even allowed to own houses because of issues of property rights. But what I want to emphasize, and I've seen it also mentioned in the manifesto of the ANC on the priority one, the issue of localization. And in agro-processing, and we have been supported a lot by trade and industry, ensuring that they expose us to the market. But I want the ANC-led government to really do more in ensuring that they don't only put the certified, but we put, monitoring mechanisms to ensure that departments are implementing the certified. Okay. Because I think that, in the main, can create a number of jobs, especially for women and young people.
Step aside, did you say?
Set aside.
Thank you so much. All right. There are quite a few comments coming through here, but I think, Gwena, the essence is that BEE is not just about giving equity to a class of black merchants who previously didn't have it. It's a broader, that's why it's called broad-based empowerment. It has affirmative action in it. It has employment equity. It's got labor rights. It's got gender access. And then it's got issues around ownership of strategic resources for the majority of the population, mineral rights, etc. So that BEE hasn't been implemented well, is what is being said. Doesn't make it a problematic program around redress. So first answer, and then maybe clarify redress, what redress really looks like, unless you believe there's no need for redress in South Africa.
No, look, we believe 100% that there's need for redress. We're just saying that 30 years later, when you talk about majority of South Africans that are living inside poverty, you still are talking about black South Africans. That's a reality. It's statistics. So if your gauge now is to say that we need to focus on where somebody is, not the color of their skin, but we say that we need to empower poor South Africans, that they need to be the ones that are benefiting from these projects. Then you're talking about real redress. You're talking about lifting people out of poverty. You're talking about empowering small businesses, and that's broad. Okay. The issue when it's just linked to race is, as I said, you have then the likes of Edwin Sodi, who's worth billions, but in no way is that benefiting the broader black South African populace that is still living in poverty. And so I think that it's often used as a campaign tool by the ANC, by the EFF, to make it seem that we're anti-redress. But what we're saying is that poverty, if you're going to tackle poverty, then let right. poverty be the metric and not okay. race, because it's no longer the metric that we should be okay. using.
ANC, Freedom Charter appeals to Onika, but there are things that need to be polished.
Onika, she's very correct. For an example, sometimes the DA misses the point. In a policy formulation or development, there are ideals and objects of a particular policy, but during implementations, there will be some kind of challenges that you actually experience, then you actually review. You don't throw it away. Mm-hmm. South Africans over the last 30 years, because of our constitutional response on redress, addressing inequalities of the past, you could see the asset base of many South Africans. For the first time, many South Africans, mud houses, you could see, they are gone. And there are only few communities that are there. There are many people that are mobile, telecommunication that are there. This is a story of a country that we must be able to tell. But we must know the damage happened over 350 years. It's 342 years to be exact. Okay. And we cannot be in a position that we can say that over 30 years, all our issues have been actually been attended to. The state must still continue to intervene in the matter of the economy, okay. because we are not starting the race at the very right. same point. That's why, in terms of our priority around economy, that is inclusive, is the most important part, okay. and supported with the issues of Human Development Index, investment in our people's capacity, okay. so that they can be in a position to participate in all the facets of our economy right. and social imperatives.
Briefly, Gwena?
Yeah, no, I just want to, again, when we're touching on this thing, you must remember that even in 2010, inside the AMSA deal, the Guptas benefited from BEE. And so it's why I was saying that it's not the right metric. Non-South Africans benefited. The people at the core of state capture benefited. And that's why we're saying remove race as a metric and allow it to be pro-poor.
Okay. Councillor Mlungisi, I'm going to start with you. The question I'm going to ask all our panelists today. So depending on whose research you believe, the Social Research Foundation that says ANC is most likely going to get about 30-something percent of the vote, or you look at Ipsos, which says it will be below 50%, but somewhere between 45 and 49%, or you believe the ANC themselves saying, we'll get our 50 plus one. Whatever it is, there's an election next week. It will deliver a result. Maybe it keeps things the same. Maybe it changes them fundamentally. From your point of view, what is the outcome that will shape South Africa for the better? And what are your plans if there indeed is a coalition?
Well, thank you very much. I think, one, we are hoping and we believe that South Africans are not going to give ANC a 50% of the vote. And that's what we are pushing even when we are doing our campaigns on the ground, because I think we don't need this one party dominating in our government, because when the ANC has a majority in government, they get to be arrogant and start to implement policies in a way that does not benefit the majority, but you know, a few individuals that are aligned to them politically, and we are working towards making sure that they do not receive 50% so that we enter into a coalition government. Well, the IFP is part of the
party charter.
But the reality is that even though we have signed and a declaration there, we have not closed a door for any possible coalition, because coalitions are determined by the electorate itself, not by political parties.
Okay.
So what will then be, even by electorate, will accept it, and we are going to keep our door open for any possible engagement on coalitions. As much as we have signed and made a declaration, but our door remains open as the IFP.
Okay, so you're part of the multi-party charter, but you may open yourselves up to other formations. DA, you lead that multi-party charter, but some decisions people feel you took unilaterally as the DA. You say you're a multi-party charter, you say you want to avoid a doomsday coalition, and then you even talk about the possibility of a coalition with the ANC, and people within the charter have said, you know, there's no consistency. But be that as it may, what's your outlook?
No, we will not be going into a coalition with the ANC. As everybody has said, you have to leave the door open for coalition talks. But the ANC in its current state, it would be impossible for us to go into coalition, because a coalition has to be built on principles. And unfortunately, the ANC isn't anti-corruption at the moment, so it would not be possible for us to go into coalition with the ANC in the current form. In terms of the actual election results, outside of the ANC, as you said, every poll shows that the ANC is going to drop below 50% inside this election, and it's why we need all South Africans to rally behind the multi-party charter. There were more South Africans that didn't vote inside the last election than voted for the ANC, and so this notion that your vote doesn't matter is incorrect.
Okay.
That we as South Africans have the capacity to rescue South Africa, but we need to unite behind the DA or our multi-party charter partners so that we can rescue South Africa, rescue Gauteng, rescue KZN, where the results are so close at the moment.
David Matlobo?
Our last word is that the organization of the people, which is the ANC, umkhatlo wa sechaba, umkhatlo wa rona, umkhatlo wa magosi, umkhatlo wa baduli, and umkhatlo wa baruti. We've worked together over the last 30 years. We've made mistakes, we've corrected them, and we're continuing to correct them. And we have a clear plan. And we believe in the capability of South Africans led by the ANC that working together, we'll be able to do more. At the helm, we have the most credible president that understands that revolution gibat. He has love of the people. will be able to deliver like we've delivered in the past and up our game. Okay. The others, indeed, they have no plan except to oppose our advance in terms of more transformation and improving the conditions of our people. And our people, let them go out in big numbers.
Do you think there will be a coalition?
There will never be a coalition. Our movement has responded. We are on the ground and we've spoken to our people. They've responded. They've pointed on our issues of discontent and we've explained ourselves and they are convinced about the credibility of our story and our ability to change. Okay. On the 27th, 28th, 29th of May, they will be there in big numbers to reaffirm the relevance of their organization, which is the ANC.
Okay, and those 27th, 28th are the early votes. Okay, I want to say thank you very much to Gwena Moloto, who is part of the DA caucus in Tshwane. David Mahlobo, ANC NEC member, former Minister of Energy and State Security and Deputy Minister of Human Settlements, and also Councillor Mlungisi Mabaso, IFP Youth Brigade General Secretary. A lot of you are commenting online, but I'll just leave you with these very provocative statements online. The Wolf of Heatherview says, politics is where fish is promising the elephant more land, he says. And Professor Khabo says, divine manipulation of the threads. That's what politicians do to the hibernating masses. Karl Marx said, religion is the opium of the masses. I say politicians, all of them, their chicanery is the nyaupe of the South African masses.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.